Hello, and welcome to the Inside EVs podcast for February the 12th, 2021. This is episode number 45. Our top stories today: Audi e-tron GT Quattro is revealed, Toyota is bringing two BEVs, one FEV, to the US in 2021, and a cheaper Chinese Tesla to be sold globally. I'm Dominic Ioni, Inside EVs editor and Inside EVs forum moderator. Joining us today is Tom Logney, Inside EVs editor and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge with Tom Logney. We also have Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast, available on all your usual podcast platforms. And of course, Kyle Connor joins us from the Out of Spec Studios. He also puts together the bedazzling videos for the Inside EVs YouTube channel. Please subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications. And if you like the podcast, please leave us a rating or maybe even a review on whatever platform you catch us on. That helps others discover us and spread the word about EVs. Of course, if you're watching us on YouTube, we'd love a thumbs up there as well. All right. So welcome, gentlemen of the panel and ladies and gentlemen of the audience. So what do we have charging up in our driveways this week? Tom, let's start with you. I believe you still had a few Porsche Taycan things you wanted to share with us.
Yeah, so last week in the podcast, I mentioned that they had just dropped off a Taycan, but we really didn't talk about it because I hadn't had the opportunity to drive it. I just got it the night before, and I was able to do some range tests and charging tests with it over the week. One of the things we wanted to do was a cold weather range test, 70-mile-an-hour highway range test. As the followers here probably know, Kyle and I try to do these 70-mile-an-hour highway range tests with all of the electric vehicles we can. And we try to do them in different temperatures because obviously throughout the year, it depends where you live. The northern states, range is going to be impacted a lot. Kyle did one a few months back, and it was perfect temperature, 70 degrees out. You know, he maximized the range, and the 4S went 280 miles, Kyle, or 279, somewhere around there.
Yeah, on the worst wheels.
And it crushed. I mean, the EPA range rating on this car is 203 miles. So he crushed it, but the temperature was perfect. It was as, other than the wheels, everything was perfect. And so I said, let's try to do one in the worst conditions. It was, I cold soaked it overnight. It was like 8 degrees Fahrenheit here overnight. I left it outside, didn't put it in the garage, cold soaked it, hopped in. The car has the winter tires on it, the Pirelli snow tires Porsche put on it for me. So it had the worst tires. It did have the aero wheels, but the tires were, you know, not optimized for low rolling resistance whatsoever. Hopped on the turnpike and drove it, and we got 213 miles. Even in the worst conditions, it was like 10 to 15 mile an hour headwinds and crosswinds. It was a windy, freezing cold day. Even in the worst conditions, the Taycan just crushes the EPA range rating. So, you know, there's almost nothing you can do to get this thing to not get its EPA range other than put it out on a track or drive it up a mountain or maybe drive it in a snowstorm. So, you know, I mean, it's just more, I know we're beating a dead horse. Some people have put in the comments, but you know, it just amazes us how, you know, any other electric vehicle we test, they on highway speeds, they don't meet their EPA range rating. I've only had one other EV do that, and that's the Hyundai Ioniq. But every other vehicle gets like 10 to 20% less range when you're driving it at highway speeds. And the Taycan, it's a range monster at highway speeds. It's a great vehicle. So yeah, we did that. And then I did some DC fast charge testing. I pulled into an Electrify America charging station and not at the optimal temperature. I know so many times we do these DC fast charge tests, and we've made sure the battery's preconditioned. We made sure it's at the perfect temperature, which is about 88 degrees Fahrenheit, 31 degrees Celsius. If you really want to charge your Taycan at the fastest speed, it has to roll in at right about that temperature. That's what the Porsche engineers told me. And then you can get the full 270 kilowatts. So I just let it roll and went into the charging station. The battery was at like 73, 74 degrees. It still charged from 5% to 90% in 37 minutes, which, you know, Kyle's been trumpeting this for a long time, that the Taycan is the best charging electric vehicle there is because of the charging curve, not necessarily because it takes in 270 kilowatts, but because it holds it for such a long time. When I unplugged at 90% state of charge, the car was still taking in 90 kilowatts. So it's like, yeah, it's just a fantastic charge. Porsche really knocked it out of the park with the charging capabilities of the Taycan.
Right on. Awesome. So just remind us again, what's the EPA number for the Taycan?
203 miles. Well, that was, I have a 2020. Okay. For 2021, it increased. Is it 226, right, Kyle? I know it's a little bit more now.
It's the same car. They just changed the algorithms.
Yeah.
Basically, when they did the range testing, Porsche did the EPA efficiency numbers on the 21-inch wheels and the acceleration numbers on the 18-inch wheels because they're Porsche and everything has to be underrated. But then they realized the EPA was just a little too underrated. So they submitted the data on the Aero 18-inch wheels. Right.
And it just validates what we've been doing all along, that saying, you know, that they just, you know, really sandbagged their EPA range rating on the car, because you can easily, in good conditions, you can easily drive a Taycan 250 to 280 miles per charge. Easily,
I've never heard
without someone, trying.
Yeah, I've never heard someone complain who bought a Taycan that says, I can't match what Porsche told me I should get, even though it's not Porsche. But everyone who buys a Tesla sold me this car that should do 330 miles. I can only do 270 or 250. And that's just the way it is.
Yeah, these companies took two dramatically different approaches with how they're going to advertise the vehicle's ranges.
It just underlines that we need a new range test, you know, a new official range test for electric vehicles, so people have an idea, you know, and so everyone's on equal ground, because it shouldn't be that kind of disparity in different between the different manufacturers.
Let me just chime in real quick, Martin. Sure. The problem with that, Dom, is there is no perfect range test. No matter what we do, no matter what test is done, people will say, I got more, I got less. I almost think there needs to be something set where the manufacturers have to do like four different tests or something and say, in these conditions, it goes this far. In this condition, it goes this far. But then it's too much information. Then people, it's too confusing for people. Right. So we've been beating this horse for a long time, and I can't figure out the best way to do it. So for EPA is not going to be able to.
Right. Well, here's the thing. They can all go far enough. That's all you need to know.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. Yeah. I would, if I can I just plug some videos? Have I got time to do that?
Yeah.
Sure. None of them are mine. I think if you haven't watched it, everyone should go watch Tom's Porsche charging video. That's about 12 hours long. It puts Lord of the Rings to shame. This is awesome, right? Because we're in a really interesting phase of EVs. There's some people that have been interested for a long time, and that so many people are coming into electric vehicles. Maybe you're watching this or listening to this for the first time to learn. Tom's done a brilliant video about charging, every possible permutation, but you learn a lot about, I found it interesting, and I talk about this day in, day out, but I reckon actually if someone's new to EVs, they would, find it, really beneficial as well. Not just for Porsche potential buyers or current owners. The other thing people should go watch, we mentioned it at the start, Kyle's range test that he did of the Porsche Taycan, because he literally does get every electron out of the battery down to stopping in the middle of the road with the hazards on, going, it's empty. And I won't tell people how it ends, because you do make it to a charger, but I won't tell people I won't spoil the ending, but please go watch that, because literally it's rinsed. So some plugs for videos that I think people should watch over the weekend.
Right on.
I love how Kyle does that, and he does that to all the cars. I actually did a range test with Kyle once. We did one together, and the same thing happened. The car had to be pushed into the stall to reach.
Yeah,
made it to the stall, but we couldn't make the last 3 feet to plug it in. I'm not nearly as brave, so when I do the range tests, I end them, but I'm always 3% or less. So it's pretty well drained at that point. But Kyle is not happy with that. Like, he's like, 3%. Oh, I could drive to Walmart and back with this,
It's not accurate. We don't know how much buffer is below zero. We got to find out. The thing with the Taycan and e-tron Volkswagen Group strategy, when that sucker hits 0 miles and then goes dash, dash, it's out. But they have a restart buffer of maybe 500 watt hours where it will kill the whole car, shut everything down. then you can restart and then you get another mile of driving range or so, which is awesome. And I used that multiple times now on Taycons. Anyway, I think a couple comments coming through here on the YouTube, maybe Facebook as well. They're wondering if the Taycan's more efficient because it has the two-speed transmission. I've had this come up a few times. And the answer is no, because when you run in range mode, it's front-wheel drive only. It actually physically decouples the rear drive unit. Because it's a permanent magnet motor, you can't actually ever turn it off. So they have a clutch system that decouples. And anything below 94 miles per hour, that sucker's front-wheel drive. And then everyone's like, why would you want to drive a Porsche in range mode? It drives the same. You literally don't feel any difference. I don't know why that's a big deal. And then you could just floor it if you want to go faster, and it re-engages. So
that's my... But the gear ratio in the front motor is equal to the high gear from the rear motor. It's, I think, 8 to 1. So that
I didn't realize it was equal, but I knew it's highway optimized.
It's not exactly equal. I fudged a little there. It's okay, very close to the gear ratio on the tall gear for the rear motor. So even though you're not in that second gear, it's kind of like you are, because the gear ratio is the same.
All right. So we got a question here. Tom Kyle, that charging profile on Taycan sounds great, but how does this affect battery life cycles? Curious, since I've heard Elon Musk talk about affecting degradation in the past. What are your thoughts? And we'll keep it quick too, because we got a ton of things to talk about today.
All right. Basically, the short answer is, for the amount that normal people DC fast charge, it will not ruin your car.
There we go. Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Don't DC fast charge, you know, 5 times a week. And if you can, but yeah, you're going to have early degradation. I mean,
look, I did 9,000 miles, maybe 10,000 miles of DC fast charging in Taycan only. I think we only AC charged it twice in a period of a week and a half. And the car was just as fresh as when we started.
Sure. All right. So Kyle, you still have the Arcimoto and in your driveway.
Yeah, the Arcimoto's here. It's in the driveway. All right, so let's talk about it. Arcimoto was dropped off right after the last podcast. It's an FUV. They dropped it off in arguably the worst color, but that doesn't matter to me because I won't judge my opinion based on the color that they drop it off in. It's in this like clown red and blue. Martin, maybe you can find a picture on my Twitter.
Yes.
You'll have to scroll down a bit.
It's like a tropical.
It's called the retro theme. Okay. But personally, it's the thing's already kind of out there, not into it. But that's okay. Some people love it. Some people hate it. Doesn't matter to me. What is interesting, though, is when I got it, it's been really cold, so I haven't been able to really take it out much. But I shot a couple TikToks with it, and we did like a 0 to 60 and took it down the highway for one exit. It does 82 miles an hour, by the way. They say it should only do 74 or 75, but this sucker is 82. And that was pretty impressive, actually.
How did it feel at 82 miles an hour?
Yeah, not as bad as you would think. You know, I think the steering ratio is a little bit too quick, but certainly if you make a point to not adjust the handlebars much, it's very comfortable. For being a three-wheel vehicle, you can't avoid potholes, of course. However, the suspension calibration is really smooth. Where that gets you is when you really throw it into a corner, it's kind of leany. And personally, it's a tough one for me. I want to like it so badly because my favorite car in existence is a Morgan three-wheeler, which is inherently a flawed machine start to finish. And you're lucky if it doesn't break down and you live after a drive. The selling points for a Morgan is you tell someone this is terrible, you will die, it's going to cost you a ton of money, and it's not practical. And then I go, oh, I love that. Please I'll give you all my money. And that's what I want.
Like,
and
money.
Then in the Arcimoto, they're taking that same premise, but trying to sell it and make it into something practical. Like you can, you know, go drive down the beach in this thing and play tennis. It's, and so that's okay. And it works great in a warm weather environment. Here in Colorado, of course, it's cold, but I still have forced myself to ride it. And I've been having a blast riding it around. So I'm starting to be like, I'm getting into this thing. I get it. It's really fun. You can see Blue here on the back. He is obsessed with it. Sure. Whenever he walks outside, he jumps on the back. He's ready to go for a ride. It's his favorite thing. The other day I decided I'm going to go take it to Starbucks in the morning. It was like 12 degrees Fahrenheit out. It was our warmest morning. And I said, you know, it's been sitting here. I've only driven it 15 miles. I need to do a review on this thing. I'm going to force myself to go to Starbucks. So back it out of the garage, nice little drive over there. And then I'm get into the Starbucks drive-thru and it completely broke down. And then now you see me, all I want is Starbucks and to get warm and back home, pushing this Arkimoto through the Starbucks parking lot to a parking space, and it's just completely dead. Like, nothing I can do. High voltage battery lights on, 12 volt battery lights on, won't come out of neutral. I call Arkimoto. They're like scrambling, and then they send me a reset procedure. So I start pulling panels off. I filmed the whole thing. So you have to like unplug wires and hit fuses. So then it came back to life and it was totally fine. And then since then, we have a Arkimoto engineer literally here in Colorado right now. He flew over yesterday morning, worked on it all day in the garage. We had the i3 with the heater on next to him in the garage because, again, it's getting below 0 degrees at night here. And then they decided that they think it's something to do with temperature. I'll update what the actual issue is, of course. But it's sitting in the driveway right now. It was -5 last night or something, and it's just an ice cube out there. And they're trying to fix it. And honestly, I want to make some fun videos with it. I want to do a drag race against the Tesla because I think that'd be fun. But more practically, I want to do a full review and actually figure out why this makes sense over a vehicle with doors. Because it's near as makes no difference, $20,000, just a little under. You can buy a used smart car for $5,000. And it's not like that's any less wide. So it's not right. Like you can take this places you can't take a car. Where I think it's really fun is, Dominic, when you and I had them in Key West. We were shredding around, and that was a blast.
That was awesome.
That was really cool. So I think that's definitely the environment. But in terms of, like, can we sell these everywhere, I'm not so sure. Also, and I do have to say, just because I am an automotive journalist and I need to remain totally truthful here, I don't think it's been cold weather tested at all yet.
Right.
And that's why it broke down.
Right. Yeah, and obviously it's not designed from the ground up to be a cold weather vehicle, whatever.
I mean, like, the fact that they're like don't park it. Yeah, they're like,
do that.
They're like, be very careful leaving it outside below freezing. Like, make sure it's in a garage. And like, I think the actual temperature was -4 degrees C was like where things start to happen. And I'm like, well, look, it's like that all the time. Why would you send this thing to Colorado if it can't handle the cold? So I'm very torn. And on one hand, I want to love it and I want it to be truly amazing. But I would be doing a disservice to myself and our viewers if I wasn't objective in saying that it hasn't really been the best experience yet. I have another week with it. Hopefully it turns around and I hope I can share some positivity.
Right. I believe they wanted to bring the price down eventually to, I think, about 12,000, 13,000 mark or something in that neighborhood. And Gary Clark asks if it's rear wheel drive, it's front wheel drive. It has two motors, one for each front wheel, and has two. And he asks if it has a 5-point harness seatbelt. It actually has 2 3-point belts, so they cross over each side, and you feel pretty secure in there.
I don't know. I don't wear the seatbelts personally. I want to be as far away from this thing if it has an accident. So I buckle in each seatbelt on the side. Don't do what I do, but seriously, I think it's safer to jump.
Yeah.
It's like the it's the price for me, which I can't comprehend. Like 17, 18 grand before you add the doors. They want to get it down to 15 or 12, but you know, you can buy a used Leaf and it comes with doors and it shouldn't be like, do you know what I mean?
You can
like
buy a new candy.
It just shouldn't be a plaything for, you know, local tourist boards to have on the sidewalk, you know, when people want to, you know, ride around town for half an hour. Like, these kind of vehicles should be something that if you need a second or third vehicle in the driveway, it's a realistic option. But even at $10,000, it's just one of those purchases that's got such a tiny, tiny market of potential people. Like, we're all excited about it. I love this. It looks so cool. I can imagine being at a theme park or you know, whatever, or some sort of closed, maybe private. Like, we don't have many private estates over here, but I know some parts of the states have like kind of like where you have like golf carts and stuff that like I can see the uses, but
Florida, we don't, the entire state of Florida, this makes sense.
So like you can sell this in Florida, but it's just that it's like that price point of these vehicles, which at the minute are so much fun, but for what it is, which is, well, you can, I'll put it back on screen. You can see the engineering. It's like, how do I justify
it's very basic. And it's fun to a point because here's the thing. It's missing some serious components, I think, such as ABS braking. This is something that should be in any new vehicle that costs almost $20,000. You hit the brakes in this thing, it locks right up. And that like locked up sideways. I'm like, oh, okay. And they're like, oh, we're developing ABS. I'm like, well, that may have been, should have been earlier in the priority list. And there's no traction control or stability control or rollover control. We have something called the Can-Am Spider here in the US. That's a three-wheeled combustion powered vehicle. I've ridden those plenty. You can go max speed, crank the handlebars, and it washes out the whole front end by locking the outside wheel so it doesn't flip over. And there's a lot of safety tech and models going on. And this has the capability for all that that will come through updates, I'm told, but it's not there yet. So I can't, you know, how can we judge something that's just a promise? We've been doing that for Tesla for too long.
Are they on sale yet? Can you buy one yet? Are they actually, okay.
I don't know if you can actually buy one and take delivery.
I mean, you can order one and it will take a while because they're still working on their back orders.
Oh, okay, cool. Cool. Yeah.
At that price point, I agree. It's very hard for me to justify buying one for yourself, but it could be used for like car sharing services in Florida, Southern California, the warm areas, some sort of a service where these things are parked, you know, on the side of the road and you use an app to unlock it and you can drive around the city. I think something like that there, and obviously the amusement parks like we talked about before. But for personal use, if you were to buy one, you know, I think you guys are right. I think right somewhere around the $10,000 mark is really the upper limit for where this thing makes sense.
Like it has a ton of range. It says it should do 102 miles around the city. I don't know what normal person wants to drive this thing 102 miles at one time. You know, the thing is they have a deliverator, which I think that's where the money's at. Because then you have fleets that can use them for inner city use. That makes sense to me. The actual consumer version, that thing, that looks, that makes sense. That's correct.
Yeah, I can see fleets. Yeah.
Yeah. But the actual consumer version, like I should be the target audience. You guys know how much I love weird things, especially weird electric cars. And, you know, it's tough. And, you know, someone just commented as an automotive journalist, I should understand the process of development and its challenges. Yes, that should all happen before they go on sale.
Right. Okay. So, like I said, we have a ton of things to talk about today. So let's leave the ARC motor aside for now and move on. We're good?
Yep.
All right. So big news of the week is, I think, well, there's a lot of big news of the week, but let's just start with this one. The sister to the Porsche Taycan has officially been revealed, and it looks pretty great. And since it's built on the same J1 platform and shares many of the same elements, 93.4 kilowatt hour battery and an 800 volt architecture, electric motors on each axle and a 2-speed gearbox for the rear. I guess I should tell you what we're talking about. We're talking about the Audi e-tron GT, which is different from the Audi e-tron SUV. This is actually the sports car, and it's, as we said, it's like built on the same platform as the Taycan. The styling's different, despite being pretty much identical proportions. Where the Taycan has like rounded, bulging muscles and soft curves, the e-tron has creases. It's like the Taycan in a Brooks Brothers suit. The only element they share on the outside is the front windshield. The base trim of the GT here puts out 469 horsepower, 464 pound-feet of torque, while the RS version, there's two versions, offers 590 horsepower and 612 pound-feet of torque. Similar to the Audi e-tron SUV, the GT has an overboost function as well that temporarily increases output from 522 and to 522 and 637 horsepower, respectively. 0 to 60 in the base GT is 3.9 seconds. That's not so impressive. I mean, it's quick, but it's slower than any of the all-wheel drive Taycans. And while the RS does it in 3.1 seconds, same as the Tesla Model S long range. So the range is given as 238 miles and 232 miles for the RS, which is probably nice and conservative with real range being better. And like the Taycan, it also has four-wheel steering. It's standard on the RS and optional on the base e-tron. Animal-free interior is standard on all models, but you can get leather if you like. Prices for the e-tron GT start at $99,900 for the base premium plus, $107,100 for the prestige, and $139,900 for the RSG e-tron GT. So, question for you all. Taycan or e-tron GT?
Taycan.
So, what do you want? Do you want the athlete showing up in the, you know, track shoes and the Nike gear? Or, as you said before, do you want the businessman showing up with the briefcase and the, you said Brooks Brothers, I'll say Armani suit? Yeah. You know, I like it because it's, I love the Taycan. I mean, that's, everybody that watches this podcast knows that I'm like in love with that vehicle. And this is just another version of the Taycan, you know, and it actually works price-wise, in my opinion, because for the base, you get the premium plus for $99.99. We'll try getting that without options, but you know, it costs less than a 4S, and you get the 93.4 kilowatt hour battery pack. The 4S, if you want to get it with the Performance Plus battery pack, it's about $10,000 more than this. Even you can get the Quattro Prestige package on the Audi GT, and it still costs less than a 4S with the performance battery. So you actually do get value for this, and it depends on what do you want. Do you want to, you know, go out with the track star, or do you want the businessman? And more versions of the Taycan are fine by me.
Sure. This only comes with one battery too, right? The 93.3?
Yeah. You don't get the option of the smaller battery pack. They all come with the larger battery.
Okay. And the Taycan, you have the choice, which makes it gives you a cheaper option, I guess.
Well, you just get the choice with 4S. And now the new the new base drive model. Yeah, the new rear wheel drive model.
But I don't think they've sold any standard batteries in the U.S. yet. I don't think we've had a Taycan with the base battery come in. I don't actually think it's available to be spec'd for our market.
You could be right.
Yeah, you're forced to get the performance battery.
If you look at the Tesla experience, at least according to Elon Musk, people tend to buy the biggest battery they possibly can anyway, and they offer smaller batteries, and you know, the crowd tends to really over by a large margin take the larger option. So
because it's not only the driving range but the charging speed benefit. That's what gets me.
True.
Yeah.
I do hope though that this new base Taycan that they put out there, that they do allow it with the smaller pack in the US. I know it won't you know, it will diminish the experience overall. You know, I agree that it will, but it will open it up for people, I think, that are on the that extra $6,000, you know, makes a difference. You know, when you start getting down in that price range, the $79,900 price range, it doesn't make a difference to the $150,000 price range. But once, you know, they're trying to make one that everybody can afford, I think that they should make it available, but the dealerships should do their best to try to explain that you would have a better ownership experience if you went with the bigger battery, but then leave the ultimate decision up to the customer.
Right. Hey, can we see the interior a little bit, Martin?
Yeah, sure.
That's where I think I prefer the Taycan exterior styling. I like the way this looks and everything, but the Taycan is such a great looking car. But the interior, I think I kind of like this interior better. Like, look at that wood on the dash, kind of nice, soft, some curves, and it doesn't have the passenger screen. At least the pictures I've seen, it doesn't have the extra screen in front of the passenger
or the screen in the center armrest.
Shocking, right? They've actually got buttons that change the temperature. I can't believe it. That'll never catch on.
Well, you know what? That's good, because the Taycan little screen down below is really super annoying. This is better than that. Yeah. Yeah. And it conked out on us halfway through our drive for like, I don't know, a couple hours, and my heated seat was stuck on. I still think I have burn marks somewhere. I just couldn't get it to shut up. But, you know, that's not to say other cars don't have glitches, too, but that was a funny one for sure. We put that in one of the videos.
Sure. You have just a couple more interior shots there, Mark?
Yeah, I might have a look at our sister site, Motor1.com.
There's some beautiful, the launch press photos that came in the press kit were really pretty. You can go on my Twitter. I posted them too. They're right out, you know, there's a side view through the driver's door that makes that cabin look so neat. I love what Audi's doing recently. I think this fits well in the lineup. I think this is the cheapest option for Volkswagen Group to come up with a halo vehicle. These angles right here, I think that's a gorgeous interior.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's stunning, right? And that's the difference with this car, is it's just, it's Audi-fied, and it's not, like, it's not a rebadging of the Taycan. There are significant bits that are the same, like the motor, the battery pack, the little knob thing underneath the steering wheel that makes it go uppy, downy, inny, outy. That's the same on both cars. But largely, they're different bits inside. When you sit inside this, you're sitting inside an Audi. And if you've sat inside an A7 or you're used to Audi's infotainment, you're sitting inside an Audi. And the same with Porsche as well. And one of the things that we thought this might be a knockdown price, knockdown performance car to get... to widen the customer base. But it's not. It's not a knockdown price. Starts at 100 grand. But it's not a knockdown performance either. They haven't hobbled it on purpose, which I was really hoping they wouldn't do. Hobbled it so as, A, not to upset their Porsche colleagues at the other end of the office, but also just to kind of differentiate them. They haven't done that. So both are very compelling cars. Right. And both are additive to the market. Both, we know the Taycan's selling very well. Tesla don't give out their numbers per model, but someone who is pretty spot on with kind of guessing these things puts the Model S at around 20,000 US sales in 2020, which is by far the biggest market for the Model S. And Taycan did just under 21,000 globally, though.
Productions.
But in terms of, you know, the Model S and the Taycan are not a million miles away in terms of sales figures. And so, you know, people want both cars. It's not like... There is some competition because they're both EVs, but the Taycan is taking 20,000 people away from combustion, who would have bought a high performance combustion car, not a Model S, like maybe a few. And also this car takes another bunch of people away from combustion, and that's the important thing. Yeah. So the inevitable stat wars happen, and people, it's like sports teams take their side, but it's not about, you know, this car up against, you know, Model S this and Model S that. It's nice. There's an Audi customer base who will drive this and go, you know what, 300 miles or 280 miles is, that suits me. It's absolutely fine. And, you know, they'll be more than happy with that. And I would be as well. I'm not in the market for this car, but I'd probably go with this only on styling, just because it's more creased on the outside. It's more aggressive, I think. The Taycan is almost a little softer. It's all subjective, you know.
What brand do you value most? Are you an Audi customer or are you a Porsche customer? I don't expect either to cannibalize either sales very much. You might get the odd person that's like a budget shopper at 130 that wants, oh, well, the RS GT can do better than your Turbo S. So what do you say you discount the Turbo S to the RS GT price? Right. Porsche is going to say, well, have a nice day. They'll go buy the Audi. But right. No, this is it's a Taycan. There's not much to say here. It's just a fantastic addition to the Audi lineup, I think.
They've also made a really good electric vehicle, which is why I'm so happy about this. It's... Everything's done properly from the beginning. That genesis of the idea started. It split off, and Porsche's team did their thing, and Audi's team did their thing. They've shared some bits, but they've gone in their own directions. But it's a proper EV with a, you know, with proper battery thermal management, four different cooling circuits, a proper completely flat underneath, a proper diffuser at the back. Hasn't got those, like some EVs have, stupid little details where the exhaust would have been. Is it Mercedes? We're looking at you. Like, it's just a proper EV, Dominic.
Or the other way around. Audi's the biggest offender. They'll ship you a car with four exhaust pipes out the back that are complete blanks, and then dump the exhaust in the middle. Total fakes. That drives me nuts more than anything.
I think the Lucid Air, when it comes out, is much more of an Audi GT competitor than the Model S. Those are cars that are luxury, you know, they're aiming at that market there. So it's going to be interesting once Lucid Air is available I'd love to do a side-by-side comparison with those two vehicles more so than the Model S.
So I have no problem saying that I like the styling of the Audi here more than I like the Lucid Air. I like the Lucid's efficiency numbers and their aerodynamic numbers and all the physical stuff, but just like, looking at it, I love the way this thing looks, I would have a hard time making that decision I'm not in that market, obviously, but yeah.
It looks like Audi's using a new shifter here in this vehicle, but they've retained a lot of their existing things. You know, if you drive a current e-tron, like an e-tron, hatchback or sportback, you'll notice there's two screens in that vehicle like Taycan. Here they've gone for the physical button approach, which I actually approve of. I'm not a fan of – I like physical buttons in a car. Some people are all like, no, there's one person in the comment that's like voice control. I'm like, absolutely not. I do not want the rest of my car to know what I'm asking to do. Or like I'm on a phone call. Let me turn off my heated seat. Hey, can you hold on 1 second? Let me go ask my car something. I'll call you back. Like that doesn't work. You just need.
What if your screen went out? But then you go with – Like in the Taycan, your screen went out. So you could have used someone mentioned Andrew Doan is watching this on Facebook. It could have used the voice command to turn off the heat seater.
Yeah, it's possible. I never use voice commands. And like I try it, make sure it works in a car. You'd be surprised how many cars it doesn't work. I just had that new Defender. Voice command did not work at all.
You need a British accent.
Yeah, maybe that's right. But yeah, you know, I think I'm pleased with Audi's approach to just eliminate that secondary screen, which gets fingerprints and is really annoying anyway, and just put physical buttons there.
Right. Well, lots of opinions on both sides. So, you know, people have options. So that's great.
Yeah. If you don't like buttons, buy a Tesla. If you like a good quality automobile that feels like a nice car, don't buy a Tesla. I like a nice car, but I bought a Tesla.
I was going to say Taycan and Audi, but okay. So speaking of cars I can afford, there looks like there might be a Tesla in my future. Tesla China President Tom Zhu, Z-H-U. I'm not sure. Tom, do you know how to pronounce that?
I think it's Zhu.
Yeah. Zhu? Okay. He was speaking with a Chinese-based state media channel, Xinhua News. Let it be known that a future smaller and cheaper Tesla designed and built in China will be sold worldwide. There's a video on the site, and it comes right about the 3:27 mark there. And there's subtitles there too. So this was what people refer to as the Tesla Model 2, and Elon Musk has spoken of this before. There's a great video. If you haven't seen this, it's kind of a nice watch because there's all kinds of clips of the Shanghai Gigafactory in operation there. And I understand, it's a good video. They talk a little bit about Tesla speed because they built this factory and turned out the first cars within a year, which is nuts. And so locally, they termed this crazy thing Tesla speed. So he's asked about it in this interview as well. I'll get to the Model 2 back in a second. This is just kind of interesting. So they asked him about the Tesla speed, and he's very diplomatic, and he gives some credit to the Chinese regulatory authorities. And to begin with, and then the workers, and then he said there's like an 8-word expression or something that really helped. I mean, not help, but the workers that they work super hard, and they had this like expression, something like leave your family aside and you know work basically, which is kind of nuts, but you know they got them results. But so anyway, back to the Model 2. "Quote unquote Model 2." So in the clip, he's asked how long would it take to achieve the goal of building this new car with local components, by which I think they mean locally sourced batteries. And Zhu replies that it should be possible within the year. Now, if I remember correctly, I think the plan is more like 3 years. But hey, if they can make it happen quicker, I think that would be great. Of course, they just finished building the Model Y production line at the Gigafactory there, and I believe you can see clips of it in that video. Let's see. Right.
So does a $25,000 Tesla really move the mark? Because you can go buy a $25,000 Tesla all day long right now, why do you need a brand new one?
Because if it breaks down, I want it to be under warranty.
Oh, I'm sure you can find a Model S still under warranty for $25,000.
I mean, I need to be under warranty for a length of time, like my whole time of ownership. I can't afford my Model S to break down.
I don't think it would break. I think you'd be fine. And the battery warranty is 8-year unlimited, and every other parts you can buy used. Like, I really think your total cost of ownership would actually be less if you bought a used Model S, because it's already taken a depreciation hit. You buy a brand new $25,000 car, it's going to be worth $15,000. So yeah, you saved on the repairs that you didn't need because the car's reliable. And then now you just lost $10,000 versus maybe even making money on a Model S if you buy it right.
Right. I mean, but you could use that argument for like every car though, right?
You can always buy a
more expensive used vehicle for the same money.
Yeah, so what's the motivation for Tesla to like make it, does a $25,000 and $35,000 car base price, which it's no longer, that $10,000 gap, I don't think is the biggest thing everywhere. Now, someone just mentioned a $25,000 Tesla would allow them to sell in Latin America. So for emerging markets, that price differential, especially when you factor in import taxes, may be the difference to getting to new markets. But will the $25,000 car allow Tesla enough profit to actually build out a charging network like they did with Model S here in the U.S.? That's another question. So there's a lot of things. I don't think it's going to move the needle as much as people think. I think you can go and buy a $18,000 Model S right now if you wanted to. Sure, it's got a ton of miles and it's ratty, but you can do it.
Right. See, but I mean, people want it, so people will buy. They'll see it's $25,000, and then with if there's like a tax credit or rebate or something, incentives involved, it's even it just makes it a lot more appealing to, you know, a huge it'll bring electric vehicles to a lot more people.
It's possible, but think about it this way. The $35,000 Model 3 was out and available for at least a year, and no one bought it.
Right, because just a little bit more, you could get a better one.
I mean, yeah, with a little more, you can get a better one. For a little bit more than $25,000, you can spend $30,000 and get the same car with a big battery. Well, now it's no longer $25,000.
Right.
And so you just buy a used Model S. That's the answer. Just buy used Model S's, in the U.S. at least. For emerging markets, I get the $25,000 thing.
So I should say this car is going to be designed and engineered in China. So it's not going to look like the Model 3, as someone mentioned, with the back chopped off and added. We have a render, like a computer-generated image of the Model 2 on the site. And it's... they just kind of made it into a hatchback. They took the trunk and made it a hatchback. It won't look like that. It's not a great, it just doesn't quite work.
Do you think we'll ever see a Tesla hatchback that's like a true hatch, not like a lift back like the Model S, but like actually flat in the back?
I don't know. Tom, what's the style of, like, if you're looking at Chinese designs now, what's the popular style in small vehicles?
Probably not the true hatchback, like what Kyle is,
lift back.
Explaining, you know, I think that's more of a European thing. It's definitely not U.S. Those hatchbacks don't sell here, right. And I don't think they're huge in China either. So, I would think that they'd probably steer away from that specific kind of design.
As sad as it is, because hatches make so much sense. I recently was just driving one. I was driving the new Mazda 3. I'm like, I just wish this was electric.
Yeah,
I love a hatch.
Mm-hmm. It makes more. I mean, I think they're a little less aerodynamic, so I think it hurts the range a little bit because it's just the air. You can't get the air flow over the back as well.
Sure, you don't get the egg shape.
Right,
but yeah. I can bring Blue and Ellie with me when I go places.
That's true.
You know, I mean, so that, like that versus aerodynamic efficiency, I'd rather have the dogs.
That's right. Yeah, I need to put stuff in my trunk and in the hatch. It makes things so much better.
Yeah, so I can't wait for the Mini JCW GP Electric to come out if they make that.
Oh, yeah. Please, Mike. That's the John Cooper Works Mini.
Yeah.
You're talking about?
Yeah, because it's like the Mini Cooper SE, but turned up to 11, and that's what I want.
What, right. Wasn't there reports that got greenlit to go to production?
I don't know if it was like you can't buy it now, but I don't know if it's like actually going to happen. I hope it does. It would really piss off all the GP enthusiasts. I've owned other GPs, by the way, and it would make me very happy though.
Mini should just transition to an all-electric brand.
Totally
just
agree.
Makes so much sense for that vehicle.
Start. They need a better drivetrain.
Yeah, well, that has to be purpose-built, designed completely to be electric. Even the current SE is just a retrofit of the existing platform. You know, so
I have to share something with our audience about the Mini Cooper SE. Okay. Tom, you probably know this, and it's just important that people realize here in Colorado, you cannot own a Mini Cooper SE and park it outside. Because anything below, I forget what temperature it is, but I was talking to some Mini Cooper SE owners on a Colorado Cars and Coffee podcast last night. They said they are getting a 50 or 30% power limit in the cold weather. And they say it's almost impossible to reach highway speeds with this limit. And it does not recover. And they even claim that there's no dedicated battery heater on Mini Cooper SE, which I find hard to believe, but I'm going to have to research it. Right. But they said they took it out of i3 and Mini Cooper SE. Tom, do you know anything about this?
Well, I know my i3 on really cold days, it definitely limited the power to the motor. You know, if I parked it outside, but it quickly recovered. It only took four or 5 minutes. So I haven't heard of anything as severe as what you're talking about. But, you know, I mean, the i3 isn't the Mini Cooper SE. Sure, they share some components and they, you know, used i3 engineering to put together the SE, but they are completely different vehicles. So no, I actually haven't really looked into that or heard from any. I'm in the Mini Cooper SE forums. I haven't really seen that.
Yeah, I've seen it all over the Facebook groups, especially from the Canadian owners. Of course, it's cold up there. But yeah, definitely something I'm going to look into. It should get close to minus 20 degrees Fahrenheit out here in the next few days. I think I might take a trip down to his house, we'll park it outside and see if it's even drivable.
Hey, so talking about the Mini Cooper and where we can get answers to things, questions like this, the Inside EVs forum actually has a very active Mini Cooper's owners group, and they are, you know, they're a great bunch of people, and they'd be happy to answer your questions. And I think I should pop in there later on and discuss this with them. Yes. All right. So let's move on. Other big news this week is has to do with a Japanese automaker. Yes, yeah, so you can see the EV Inside EVs forum there on their screen. Yes, that's my home. All right, so finally, Toyota is saying it will bring some plug-in cars to the U.S., two battery electrics and one plug-in hybrid, or Prime in Toyota parlance. They haven't released any details. A lot of the press release they put out is spent trying to convince us that plug-in hybrids are just as low carbon as battery electric vehicles and also cheaper, which strikes me as kind of counterselling their electric cars, but that's Toyota for you, right, Martin?
They have gone out of their way for so many years to bash EVs. We are all fascinated how they are going to make that quick step from... first of all, EVs aren't happening, la 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 la, to EVs are happening, but they're terrible, to we're making EVs, please buy them. Good luck, Toyota. I don't understand. Look, they've got the talent, they've got the people, they've got the money, they've got the resources, they can make great EVs. Please don't make it like a Mazda MX-30, which is the most horrible example of an EV with a tiny battery. Again, it's got such a small battery that when it's cold, it'll do so few miles. And yet the press release people will tell you, oh, it's because we're saving carbon. We could have put a bigger battery in, but we're all about saving the planet. So we went for a small battery because we're green. Please buy one. No. So I can't wait to see what they come with. Let's approach it with an open mind. I know I will, because they have got everything in their locker to smash it if they want to, if they want to. Ford are doing a similar thing. With Ford have been promising plug-ins forever and have been just ringing the bell for plug-in hybrids. And then this week, it's not in our running order this week, but maybe we'll get to it. Jim Farley said, in Europe, we're just ditching plug-ins and going full EV. We're licensing the MEB platform. Plug-ins just hybrids aren't going to work for us anymore. And that's a GM
approach too.
It's a 180 on what Ford have been saying for years, which is no plug-ins. Like, they've been using that electrified word for years, which is, hey, we're making electrified cars. And it was like 2 or 3 days ago. It was on the main Ford event last week. But they were like, look, we're just going to build pure EVs in Europe because plug-ins are just like, they're not the future. They're good for now. So, you know, we'll see what Toyota do. Like, I see all the doomsayers online saying, oh, Toyota have to make EVs or they're going to become extinct. They're a dinosaur. They're Nokia. They're not. They're Toyota. You don't get to be Toyota without being smart and making good decisions. But time is not on their side. They have to bring some good EVs soon.
Right. So any guesses whether these will be all new vehicles or, say, a Toyota-branded version of the Lexus UX 300e these are my guesses. So the Lexus UX 300e with a Toyota badge, an all-electric Prius, and a Venza Prime.
And not RAV, not RAV4?
If you're unfamiliar, Venza is a crossover SUV, surprise. That starts around $32,470.
RAV4 would be the most obvious choice to electrify. Go after that ID4 market and just capture it. They have the ability to.
Just take those big models that people are walking back into Toyota dealerships going, my lease is up, what do I get next? And they go, oh, I've got an electric one now, get that, okay.
Yeah, but I'm not so convinced that, because I don't know where people are going. If everyone decides to go buy ID4, Mustang Mach-E, this new electric Toyota, all at the same time, where on earth are they going to charge? Because Electrify America only has a few plugs per station and, honestly, very low uptime. So, like...
Right.
This is going to be a huge problem coming up in the next year. Right now, it's can you get from A to B on a CCS network? The answer is yes. Can you get many cars from A to B? The answer, I think, is no. Also, I'm driving a Prius this week, and I wish that was electric, but it's actually a fairly good car. And I do not hate the Prius like most people would think I do.
Really?
Yeah, love it, actually. I think it's a great car. Very practical. Yeah, but I don't go into it with the expectation of speed. Right. I did a 0 to 60 TikTok yesterday. It took almost the entire length of the TikTok to reach 60 miles an hour. But that's funny. We had a good time with it. And you know what? I like the Prius. I recommend them. And this one's an all-wheel drive version, by the way, with an electric motor on the rear axle. Mm-hmm. Guess what? It makes 7 horsepower on the rear axle. Somehow this qualifies for all-wheel drive. I'm not sure. Sorry for the derailment. So
I know Martin mentioned it, but one of the things that just really smacks me is in the press release that they announced, they had to pat themselves on the back about how they're so good with environmental vehicles and electrified models. And this is, I'm going to read it here. Toyota has over a 40% share of the total alternative fuel vehicle market, which includes a 75% share of fuel cell vehicles and a 64% share of hybrids and plug-ins. And then they go on to say how the advantages of the plug-in hybrid of a full BEV over a plug-in hybrid is negligible. And they cost less, so the plug-in hybrids are the way to go. So even when they're coming out and saying, you know, okay, we're going to do this, we're going to bring the cars that people have been asking for, they're like, yeah, you know, we're going to do it, but you know, we're already there, and these cars aren't that great, so hey, you know, here they are.
But we'll sell you two of them.
Different ones. God, it's just brutal. Let's see. I hope these vehicles use the new platform that they're developing. Was it the ETNGA? Tinga or something like that?
Right. People call it. Tinga.
Yeah. So whatever. You know, hopefully they'll that would be the one thing that would make me give me a little more confidence if they're coming in on the whole new platforms that are developed just for their electric vehicles. Begrudgingly, but they are trying to do it right at least. It's going to be interesting to see what these vehicles are and if they're dedicated platforms or not.
Right.
Yeah, but this what's FCA doing with electrified vehicles? They're just slapping Hellcats and Pacificas over there.
So, I mean, this is a later on in our story, running order, and we might not even get to it. I don't think we will, but speaking of FCA, they did show us, they will be showing us an all-electric Jeep Wrangler concept that they usually put out a few concepts every year. There's like 4 concepts or so, different, just reimagine their vehicles a little bit and throw them out there. So this is not going to be a production-oriented thing, but yeah. They're going to show us an all-electric version, but it's really... It's like an aftermarket, like you went in your garage and you built a battery box and stick it in where you
can. Yeah, it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, it means nothing.
I just want a Hellcat Pacifica. That's all. That would make me very happy.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on from Toyota because this is kind of great. Tesla and GM may get 400,000 more EV tax credits under Biden's Green Act. So looks like the federal tax credit is being extended for automakers who have already sold over 200,000 units. At the moment, that applies to General Motors and Tesla. The credit amount will be slightly lower, 7,000 instead of 7,500. So this is what's being proposed in the Growing Renewable Energy and Efficiency Green Act. It also covers other environmental policies and programs as well, like extending a solar investment tax credit by 5 years, which would be good for Tesla, I imagine. At the start of the new phase-out period created under the bill, the credit is reduced by 50% for one calendar quarter and subsequently ends. So that's how it's going to fade out. You know, the last quarter, it's going to be half of $7,500. So this has to be passed this year, and I imagine it will be, since it could negatively affect Tesla and GM if people don't buy their cars for fear of missing out on the credit, you know, that they're going to get from buying from another brand. So I wanted to ask you guys if you think this is enough. But first, I wanted to say I think it isn't. It's great, but I don't think it's enough. Tax credit of this size don't do anything for people, or much for people like me, because we don't pay that much in taxes to begin with. We don't make enough to make them pay that much. So I would much rather prefer a rebate, and I'd like to be able to buy that $25,000 Tesla for $18,000. But I, you know, like with this program, I would imagine I would have to end up paying $22,000 or $23,000 just because I don't make enough to pay that much in taxes. So what do y'all think?
So let me jump in on this one, because this is something that I really, really have been thinking a lot about and talking a lot about for the last few years. First off, I think Tesla and GM need to qualify for the tax credit. Put that to the side. I think it's a shame that two of the biggest electric vehicle manufacturers in the U.S. don't qualify for the U.S. tax credit, and anybody else, importers, you could, you know, if Candy brings their cars in from China, they can get a tax credit, and Tesla and GM can't. That's wrong. That set aside, I hate this. I agree with you, Dom. I don't want to just extend, just reinitiate it and give the credits more. The federal tax credit, the EV tax credit, needs a total revamp. Now, the problem is, with our dysfunctional government, it's probably not going to happen. This is probably the best we're going to get. But as Dom pointed out, it has to get changed from a tax credit to a point of sale rebate, because it punishes people that are economically disadvantaged in its current form. That, of course, people that make a ton of money, they can afford to pay for the vehicle up front and wait 8 or 9 months to get a tax credit back. If they're buying a $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, $100,000 car, no problem. You know, it really doesn't matter. It gets to a point where it doesn't even matter if they get it back yet, let alone wait for the time. Yet the people that are buying $20,000, $25,000, $30,000 EVs, that makes the difference between them being able to buy the car or not, if they can get it up front. So that's to put number one, it's got to be transitioned to a rebate, or it should be transitioned to a rebate. Number two, we have to scrap the 16 kilowatt hour limit as being the linchpin to get the full tax credit. That was a great goal 15 years ago when this thing was passed. It's a joke now. You know, plug-in hybrids that go, you know, 30 miles of range have 16 kilowatt hour batteries. Move the goalposts. You know, we've got to have either a much higher, you know, I would go as high as saying you need a 40 kilowatt hour battery to get the full tax credit, or transition it to, instead of the battery size, going for how many miles it goes on electric. Like if it goes, you know, make 200 miles the point where you get the full tax credit, and you know, give them, you know, $25 per mile on electric range, something like that. And give the manufacturers a goal to reach, so they can't just produce these vehicles that, you know, have 16 kilowatt hour, like the Prius Prime has a 16 kilowatt hour battery. It gets the full tax credit. Not the Prius Prime, sorry, the RAV4 Prime. Right. Yeah. So it gets the full tax credit. It's a great plug-in hybrid. Don't get me wrong, it should get some kind of incentive, yes. But should it get the same incentive as, you know, a 250 mile or 300 mile, you know, 5-passenger sedan like a Chevy Bolt or something like that? That is, you know, is getting people, giving the opportunity to reduce their carbon footprint a lot more than, say, the RAV4 Prime will. So, I mean, those are the things. It should transition to a rebate. There should be a more difficult linchpin for the full amount of the rebate or tax credit, whatever it is. And I would, to quite honestly, I would consider having some sort of a financial cap on it. I would consider doing somewhere around the $80,000 or $90,000 mark. I was all for having no cap years ago when this thing started, because all the EVs that were really good EVs were going to be expensive because they were so expensive to make. The cars aren't super expensive to make anymore. Now, you can make plenty of cars that are long range that cost way less than $100,000. And the people that are buying cars that cost $150,000 don't need the tax credit.
I think it would be nice if we had like a good transition from a rebate to a tax credit above a certain income threshold, like $150,000 or $200,000 a year household. I mean, transition it to a tax credit of some kind instead of a rebate, which is will have less impact on the.
I think most of Tom's points were 100% accurate, and Tom, for head of transportation for the U.S. government, please.
Yes.
but no, actually, personally, my views. I wish we didn't have a tax credit altogether. But if we are going to have one, I agree with Tom that this is not the best solution.
It was great when it came out. It was, you know, but that's 15 years ago. The industry has evolved. Things have changed. You have to be able to massage it. But, you know, I've talked to people that are, you know, involved in this process and lobbying the government entities that you know, are trying to make headway. And the things I just proposed, guys, aren't going to happen. It would require the whole you know law to be rewritten and everything, and you'll never get our Congress to get that approved. Even the way it is now with the Democrats controlling you know the House and the Senate, it would never get approved. So the best we can hope for is a massage of it like this, like okay, we're going to give Tesla and GM back their credits, we're going to change it a little bit. That it's unfortunate, but we have to accept that the reality that it's not going to get completely rewritten and be better. This is the best we're going to get.
All right. Anything else real quick? Any questions? Oh, there was something I wanted to address. Andrew Doan mentioned that the GM and Tesla will raise their pricing if there was a rebate. The $7,000 will ultimately go to the manufacturer and not the consumer. Well, right now, GM is putting, like, for their both EVs, I don't know how much of the money they're putting on the hoods of
$8,500.
Like, a lot of, because you can buy, like, a Bolt now from dealers for, and I think dealers might be putting money out there, too, because you can get Bolts all day long online for under $25,000. And so,
yeah, because keep in mind that $8,500, that's still dealer selling at full MSRP.
Right.
Then they can contribute a bit as well.
Right. Yeah, you can get deals on the Bolt EV. Hey, by the way, I should mention too, check out the site. Hopefully we'll be streaming this on live on the site, but the Bolt EV and the Bolt EUV will be debuting on Sunday, on Valentine's Day. So that's something to look for.
Really? On a like, honey, this is the best day ever. Come with me on a date. The Bolt EUV launch. What? That's a terrible. I could have done this on a Wednesday in the middle of March. Like, right. It's not that exciting of a car to, like, ruin Valentine's Day over.
Well, I'm excited about the new one anyway. I'm yeah. Anyway.
Okay.
We'll leave that there. So other big news real quick. Let's see. Let's back up here a little bit. Okay, so SK Innovation EV batteries have been banned for 10 years by the US ITC. It's a trade commission, I believe, which is kind of like, that's a big deal.
It's a huge deal.
It's, man. So the case started in the spring of 2019. LG Chem sued with another, both of these are South Korean battery companies. LG Chem sued SK Innovation over alleged theft of commercial secrets. SK Innovation defends itself, but in the end, the ITC sided with LG Chem. According to the announcement, SK Innovation EV battery business, the importation, domestic production, and sale of batteries for electric vehicles is banned in the U.S. for 10 years. However, to not harm its clients that were hoping to avoid a catastrophic supply disruption, the ITC will allow the continuation of the Ford F-150 electric program for 4 years and the Volkswagen ID4 program for 2 years to give them time to find new suppliers. Now, people are saying the Biden administration can possibly like overturn this decision. I don't know. This 10 years seems like I mean, penalize them, but man, this could seriously gum up a whole, you know, the whole plans of different automakers, and even I think Hyundai and or Kia are using SK Innovation as one of those two are using SK Innovation as well. And I don't know, Kyle, what's up?
It's just all a mess. We need as many batteries as possible. Look, I don't want to pretend to understand the complexities of the situation, but 10 years is a really long time. I'm sure that's not going to be the case. I think there's going to be ongoing negotiations to work their way out of this. Lawyers are really good. But you know what? This is they're investing heavily in the U.S. At least we were going to have the factory literally right down the street from the ID4 plant here, right. In Chattanooga, Tennessee. And one in Georgia. This is a big deal. And man, it's going to be hard to see what the effects of this will be. But I'd say right now, things are not looking so great. But Tom, do you think they'll be able to get out of this? What do you think?
Look, we're not privy to the information that was, uncovered during this investigation. So I have to believe that it was pretty damning that they stole intellectual property, and that's serious. If you're LG Chem and you've come up with this great battery tech, and all of a sudden another company comes and takes 50 of your employees, and all of a sudden, hey, they're making what we just invented. You wouldn't be like, well, it's for the good of the EV industry. Let them make their money. I mean, I wonder if an alternative resolution would be to let them build it, but like make them give LG Chem like 25% of the revenue or something like that. I don't know. Maybe LG Chem wouldn't go for that. Maybe they want to crush their competitors. I don't know. I don't know. Maybe they would say, okay, give us 25% of your revenue and you deal with building it. Who knows? But I wonder if that's sort of an alternative that we could go with here. Yes, it's going to cost jobs. I mean, they're building two factories down in Georgia. And while the verdict allows them to produce batteries for Ford for 4 years and for Volkswagen for 2 years, would you still go forward and complete the construction of the battery and power it up and hire people and everything so you could use it for that short period of time and then shutter the factory and shut it down and stop, or continue making batteries and send them to export, because they could make them there and sell them in other countries. That this doesn't preclude them from doing that, but I don't know if it makes sense. So it's looks on the surface like it's going to cause jobs, it's going to hurt the economy down there in Georgia, it's going to really throw a cog in Ford and Volkswagen's plans, but they stole intellectual property. Can't just say, it's there's such a short supply of batteries, you can do whatever you want, we'll give you a little fine here and move on. There must be some serious proof in this, like I said earlier, and I can't side with a company that's been stealing, stealing intellectual property from another.
But on the other hand, it's like we need the batteries and we need jobs.
Yeah, I know.
Seriously, these are good jobs in like you're, places you're right. where they're.
And you'll man. So you look past IP theft.
Yeah, no, we can't do that. There has to be some penalty, but just 10 years seems like a lot, but I guess we'll
must
see.
Must have been some good evidence there, Dom.
Yeah, no, I agree. Definitely. There's, yeah.
Seems to me like this will just be caught up with lawyers and courts for years and possibly end in a settlement.
Right.
With factories halfway through being built and just such big plans, seems to me like it's one of those ones where 3 or 4 years' time, the lawyers have earned all their money they can, and then just two companies go, look, here's an amount of money undisclosed from one to another.
Of course,
it doesn't. LG don't destroy their competition by doing that, but they're not going to destroy SK. They're building plants all around the world, so it seems to me like one of those cases where a settlement gets made. Nobody, everyone agrees that nobody did anything wrong, kind of thing. But we'll wait and see.
Hopefully, right. Martin.
Hopefully. Yeah.
Okay, another quick bit of news. So remember last week? That's a different bit of news.
You've teased us with what you're going to say.
Let's just do that real quick because I got to mention this anyway. So last week we said the big headline of the day, and this is all on me, was that Apple may be betting billions on Kia to make its Apple car. Scratch all that.
Well, you lied to us.
I gave the best information I had.
I feel so cheated now. No,
you
I
intentionally dissuaded us. No, this is it's off. So who are they going to work with? Is it going to be Lucid?
I don't. That's what I think they should do. But anyway, according to the Korea Herald, Hyundai and Kia, in separate regulatory filings, said they are not in talks with Apple over developing an autonomous vehicle. Then in the next paragraph, they also say the car makers are said they are considering forming a partnership with foreign companies in regard to self-driving vehicles, but no decision has been made yet. So like this, I'm thinking, is this a loophole?
Is it a subsidiary of Apple?
No, I mean, like Hyundai and Kia aren't in talks, but maybe this other company they're going to put together are still in talks with Apple. I mean, I don't know. Maybe that's too much trickery and subterfuge or whatever. But
I think Apple will have hated this from the very moment that Hyundai put their statement out to say we're working with Apple. Statement came 5 minutes later. We're not. What we might be. We're not. We might be. Someone got fired that day. And then I think ever since then we've been talking about it too much, and Apple hate being. You know, I think who just replaced. Porsche just replaced the head of their Cayenne program because the guy that was leading the Cayenne program has been poached to go to, you guessed it, Apple. Apple are not still employing all these people if nothing's going on.
Right.
So something's happening, but I think they hate all this. It was just too much, too soon, too public. The Apple style is to finish something, to have it perfect. You know, the amount of times they've messed up in the past, like Apple Maps was a disaster when it was new.
I remember that. That was so bad.
Like buildings were all over the place. Like it was, and like Mobile Me was terrible. But that, you know, like the times they've screwed up is so. They launched a kind of wireless charging pad that never actually came to market. They're the rarities. I think Apple will have hated all this. So this statement to me says we're putting it to bed. The heat will die down in a year's time. We'll find out more.
All right. So yeah, let's just leave that as it is. And move on to this other little bit. This is pretty big. Electric truck and SUV maker Rivian is going to hit the stock market with an IPO this fall. People are saying, to be vague. Actually, this came out in Bloomberg, and I wrote this up. The source is described as people familiar with the matter who ask not to be identified. So that gives us a rumor tag on our story here. So yeah, but an IPO and not the this special acquisition company SPAC situation.
Yeah, some of the other EV people.
They'll actually have to do some work and talk to investors and tell them their prospectus. Right. Dominic, you wrote this up. Doesn't it value Rivian at something like $50 billion?
Right. So they're looking at a valuation of $50 billion. So that's the thing with going public the other way. It's hard to get that kind of money. I mean, you have to have the acquisition company would have to have like $50 billion.
They've sold no cars.
We don't even know what they're putting in their cars. Yeah. Is it all proprietary IP or is it all off-the-shelf components like I've been told? Is it made it look really great and I'm sure it'll be cool. But yeah, my understanding is they're not building everything from the ground up. It's a 400-volt system architecture because most components that you can buy from tier 2-3 suppliers are 600-volt rated. If they were going to build it from the ground up, why wouldn't you go 800 volts? I asked a battery engineer this, and he said, oh, well, most components that we're purchasing are only rated up to 600. And I'm like, so it's a cost thing. If you were to do it ideally, you'd go as, you know, 1,000 volts like Lucid. That's the way to do it. So I'm not convinced that all their technology is there. They haven't shown us anything that disproves what I'm saying, at least.
I mean, for me, I think they could be going this, like you said, by a supplier route and not developing their own component IP. I don't know. I haven't really heard a whole lot about
that. Yeah, because they got caught up with this whole Amazon van thing. Everyone that was on the truck project, when they got the Amazon order, they took everyone off. They said, just make the truck happen. We got to make these vans.
Right.
And that's my understanding of what the culture was like. I think it's a lot better now, but yeah, I mean, I'm sure the truck will do some cool things and interesting things, but I'm not convinced it's going to be a technical marvel. I think the overall package is going to be attractive, work really well, and have a giant-ass battery, but I think that's the way they're going to get the range. And by the way, I love it. I think that works. I don't think you need to.
Same as Hummer. With the Hummer, they've gone all the batteries in. How many have we got? Put them all in!
Right, but that's still GM's IP in that. They develop those motors, they develop the battery systems, wireless batteries.
Well, still, same problem. They developed all of their system architecture to operate at 400 volts, but then they realized they can't get it to charge fast enough. So it goes ka-chunk and switches from parallel to series. And now it's 800 volts, but only when charging. But imagine what happens when that little ka-chunk doesn't work and then you spike all your components. Your little Hummer is going to take off like a freaking rocket ship.
I hope they've thought. I'm sure they've thought of something.
Oh, I'm sure they have.
But that's the thing, like $50 billion, and they've not. Now Rivian aren't a new company. Rivian have been going a lot of years. They've taken a while to find their groove, and they're in their groove. I think we're all keen that the vehicles are great, and you know are going to be great. But $50 billion, they've not sold anything yet.
That's true. But they have 100,000 vehicle order for just one of their models, and
I think they sold one Amazon van, didn't they?
Over 10 years. They've got to deliver the Amazon van 100,000 by 2030.
Right.
So if that's a straight line, and it's probably not a straight line, but if it were a straight line, it's just over 10,000 vehicles a year, which is still niche car maker territory. So that's not, the van isn't a big deal. The Amazon deal is, the investment is a big deal,
right?
But the van itself isn't a big deal. They're not making that many of them a year.
Well, it gives them the capital to get all the other stuff going as well, right? Because that's not really their...
Those vans do look nice, by the way.
They look great.
Yeah.
They look really good. Do. And you'll see them. You'll notice them. You'll see them on the streets. Be like, Rivian.
It's futuristic. It's positive. It's great. Then you look at GM's medium-duty commercial division. They made it the ugliest thing ever.
Right. They get more range.
They look terrible. Yeah, who cares? The Amazon vans are really sweet. And I think Rivian, super exciting. I'm all about it. I really am trying to take one to Alaska this summer. Maybe I shouldn't have said that, but we're trying to do a summer road trip in one, basically. And should be super neat.
All right. So anything else we should hit really quick here before we close it out? Rivian's going to open 10 showrooms in 2021. That's this year. The first one in Chicago. That's worth mentioning. The Ford, and sticking with pickup trucks, the Ford F-150 electric pickup truck will enter production in 2022, they're saying now. We were speaking about Lucid earlier. They're confirmed their Air sedan deliveries will begin in Europe in late 2022. Late 2021. That's this year in Europe.
Mm-hmm. Just quickly on that, it's one where we updated our story after they confirmed it. So to explain the Lucid story, somebody tweeted Lucid. The official Lucid account said late 2021,
okay,
which was the at Lucid Motors account. So we, hence why the headline on our article says late 2021. But then they came out with, it's not this article, but then Lucid press office came out with, we're very sorry, we misspoke. Twitter, social media wasn't joining up with the trick. It's 2022 for Europe.
Okay.
So it's good. I mean, look, but that's like, that is, we shouldn't underestimate, by the way, a car maker coming out and being like, no, hang on, we got this wrong. Here's the truth. We're being very transparent. Give them some awesome praise for going, oh, look, no, we just mistweeted. It's early 2020s. It's not that much of a delay. So they were honest, and that, one of the reasons we love them. I love them.
I love everything about Lucid.
They're doing everything right so far.
This is a small company, and they have I'm sure they have a fair amount of U.S. orders, but they're going to sell in Europe as well. I'm surprised that
they're going. UAE. They'll even build them in the UAE, it sounds like.
Right, yeah. Yep.
And that's the perfect car for Dubai. Mm-hmm. Yes. Can we just talk about how good in that purple with the bronze, everything, how good that's going to look in Dubai? Man, I got to see that. That's going to be neat.
Have Lucid spoken about sales and servicing outside of US? Because I don't recall anything, but I might have missed
it. Have the same model. They're going to have to build out their own service centers.
Yeah.
Because companies like XPeng, the Chinese company, they've just got some... I forget who in Europe they've gone with, but they've just done a deal with someone but it wasn't a big name that I'd heard. Maybe it was a big name in Norway where they're shipping their cars already. I wonder if Lucid were doing a sale. I know Fisker have said the same thing.
Too particular about their customer experience, about their cars. I mean, Tom, you've spent a lot of time with Lucid. I've spent a lot of time with the team. They are very particular about the experience, and I think they'll just spend the money to build out a service network themselves.
Right.
Yeah, hopefully we'll get some answers on that. Well, pretty soon we're going to have a visit to their factory. I got an invitation to visit the factory the end of this month, but I, from what I understand now, it might get pushed back till early March. So I'll be able to spend some time walking around, shooting some video inside their factory, and hopefully get some answers to some questions like the service.
Thank you. Cool.
Oh, one last thing before I go. Kia unveiled its new roadmap for its EV transformation, or transformation, I should say, because it's not all EV. The general plan is for BEVs envisions 11 all-electric cars in the market by the end of 2026. Seven of those are battery electric vehicles based on the EGMP platform, and there will be four other BEVs using existing ICE platforms, I guess. So 11 in total, and six out of those will be crossover SUV segment. The rollout is to be the rollout is said to be as follows: one in 2020, that's going to be the Kia, was it CV or L CV, I believe, which is going to be a crazy car. We're going to see that pretty soon. That's going to be very exciting.
Well, CV CV is the working name, right? Or the
so it's going to have a
It won't be called the CV. Yeah,
it's going to be the EV5 or the EV4, or EV6.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so much better.
Man. We just got Cadillac stop using the alphanumeric numbers, you know, and actually using like interesting names again. And yeah, other people are going backwards. But anyway, so yeah, one in 2020, one new one in 2021, one new in 2022, three in 2023, two in 2024, and three new to 25, 25, 26. So whatever. But just short term, this new Kia coming on the EGMP platform is going to be very exciting. 0 to 60 in 3 seconds, I believe we were talking about earlier this week.
Yep.
And so that's pretty great. So that brings us to the end of our show. I'd like to thank you all for joining us. If you have any comments on any of the topics on today's show, you can comment on the Inside EVs podcast post, the YouTube comment section, or on the Inside EVs forum podcast thread. Don't forget, you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. Tom Malogny is at Tomalog. Martin Lee is at EV News Daily. Kyle Connor is at Out of Spec. I'm at Dominic_Y. Have a wonderful week. Click subscribe, tap that bell icon for notifications, and we'll see you all next time. Ciao.